Hi, folks. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us here in the second segment. We're talking with Josh Reeves about the lost secrets of ancient America, and we're getting into some really interesting territory here. And of course, talking about how anthropology is used against people, the various different divisive issues and wedge questions that, of course, is ultimately just kind of keeping people from getting to the bottom of what these sites are about, really. What are the true origins? Can we get some kind of honesty and objectivity into this picture, as opposed to kind of just a debate of you know, who it belongs to, or whether what has happened historically is correct or whatnot. I think we need to get to a point where we basically say, and that it should be investigated. Yes, look into it. Let's clear it up and all that. But as far as this question is concerned, put that to the side for now and just say what has happened has happened. Stop the idea of whether it's right or wrong, or how this is going to, you know, shape other things, and let's just look at the evidence objectively. What does it point to? What does it imply? What are we going to find? Is it going to be a shocking discovery where we realize that something much more supernatural has occurred, or is it going to be more down to earth and we're going to realize that no, it was pretty much largely you know, humans themselves in different capacities that build some of these sites, what have you. It's a difficult puzzle to solve, of course, but we have to get rid of the guilt, the shame, the blaming, all the other aspects that now plague this field, which is very unfortunate. But again, I'm convinced that it's done for political purposes today against Americans as an effort to keep them away from these kinds of stories. And ultimately, I think Josh is right as well, that it ultimately keeps away from the potential deeper level to where this might point to. Indeed, things like, you know, giants who built some of the sites. Is it a pre-technology that existed? Is this ultimately, again, kind of making confusion in terms of our own origins and what have occurred on this planet before? So these are very interesting questions. Now, tell us a bit more, Josh, about the engineering at some of the sites and what you think the usage was for, because I mean, America is a big continent. There's a lot of different sites scattered all over this continent that are very similar. There are similar things showing up in them. How do you think that this network was built? Is it by potentialities of the same culture? Has there been different cultures that has built it, and was there specific usages for some of these sites, if there indeed was a level of engineering to them, Josh?
Absolutely. That's, you know, that's a big question. There's lots to talk about on that question, because that is something that has been a big mind-blowing thing for me, going to all these sites. Because, you know, when any one of us, when we look at a map, when we look at a map of, say, the United States, or we look at a map of Europe or anything else, we see borders, we see territories, you know, we see states, we see division. And it's very easy in the mind of the modern man to not realize or not really think about the fact that in the time in which these sites were being constructed, there were no borders, there were no territories. And so going right back to what you were just saying there at the intro and what we were talking about at the end of the last hour, it's relevant to that as well. We are kind of in our modern day, we see, you know, if you go to Ohio, in the Ohio Valley, and you visit all the sites there, and we cover quite a bit of those in Volume 2, from the Newark Earthworks to the Fort Ancient site. I mean, all of these sites are, you know, they're separated in some cases by hundreds of miles, and some of them are spread across states, you know, from Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and we just see these as being sites that were pertaining to the particular local regions of people that were there. And what's mind-blowing is to find out that these sites are actually not separate sites at all, and actually all work together as one massive site that are spread out over many, many states. And this isn't just localized in one area. I'll give you two examples of where I found this, one being the Ohio Valley. I found out and discovered that the Newark Earthworks, the Serpent Mound, the Fort Ancient site, which is something like, I don't know, 50 miles away or something like that. All these sites actually were built and constructed to work together as one cohesive unit, so that when people were on their way to one particular site to practice, you know, religious activities or whatever it may be, they would actually be experiencing on their entire trek, they would be experiencing a encoded religious experience, particularly going through death, the experience of death and what you experience in the afterlife. These are encoded in many of these sites that that happen over hundreds and hundreds of miles away from each other. And the way that we know that they weren't just built by, you know, separate cultures and linked together later on is the fact that someone was working from the engineering aspect. Someone was working from the same exact blueprint over the course of, in some cases, thousands of years. Particularly in Ohio, we see measurements in plus stuff like the Newark earthworks. We see measurements throughout these earthworks that are uniform across dozens of different sites, meaning the exact measurements and circumference of a lot of these sites, and many of them have 666 encoded into them, which doesn't, you know, many people think it pertains to the devil and whatnot, but it actually goes back to the system of numbering the Babylonian gods. We see this encoded in its exact form across many, many sites across the Ohio Valley. And also, the other particularly interesting thing to me is when we went in volume two, we go and explore a lot of the stuff out west. A lot of people had asked me, you know, okay, we know, everybody knows about the stuff in the Midwest of the United States. Everybody knows, you know, Ohio and this and that and the other. But has there been things like this found across the western United States? And I was blown away to find out that it indeed does. And in volume three, we go and cover this area known as the Four Corners area. And that the Four Corners area pertains to New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, and Arizona, that whole area in there. We went to Chaco Canyon, went to some sites in Colorado. We went to some in Utah for volume three. And what you find when you go there and you visit the visitor center, and a lot of the stuff they don't really talk about online, but you'll find out when you go there, is that these sites like Chaco Canyon were actually meant to work in tandem with other sites that are found as far away as Utah, as far away as Colorado. These were not separate sites that were built, again, by just the local populations. These were sites that were built hundreds and hundreds of miles away, in some cases, from each other, to work as one cohesive site that you would experience while traveling to them. At Chaco Canyon, they found the evidence of every religion known to man up to that point. There is pottery there, pottery shards found at Chaco Canyon from all over the world. People were traveling. There was some sort of, people have associated with extraterrestrials and whatnot at Chaco Canyon. And I think because of the little short doors that only someone about 3 feet tall could walk through, which exist in this whole entire thing, I think it's probably one of the reasons why people do that. Mm-hmm. But there was something there. There was something of very high religious authority at Chaco Canyon because people came from all over the globe to come to this place, and they broke their pottery there as a tribute to whatever specific deities were existing in that area. So at Chaco Canyon, we see massive engineering feats that the local population had no knowledge of. We know that they were an agrarian culture prior to these structures being built, and then almost literally overnight, all of a sudden, here they have massive astronomical information. They have structural engineering information that they couldn't have had any knowledge of. We find trees that were used to reinforce some of the structures at Chaco Canyon that came from hundreds and hundreds of miles away in some cases. We also see iconography, such as the hand motif, the Stargate portal motif. We see these same iconography. I found them in Anasazi ruins in Colorado, in where we were filming for Volume 3, and found the exact same stuff that mirrors that in Chaco Canyon, which is hundreds and hundreds of miles away. So the engineering side of it was something that I got into, again, because of the rock wall. And that was something that that was really overlooked in the History Channel's the rock wall documentary that they did. The main thing that that they left out, they didn't bother telling anybody what the rock wall itself was made of. They didn't do any analysis on the stone. And even though there's been multiple analysis done on this showing that the rock wall is actually not rock, it's actually made of various types of crystals from it has stuff like zircon, garnet, starlight, titanite, brookite, niobium, all these materials that we in our modern day use extensively in every sort of structural engineering capacity you can imagine, mm-hmm. again, from satellites, rocket engines, pipelines, all of this stuff. And we find that in the rock wall. We find that in all these ancient sites. The main thing about the, without going too much into it, the main thing that the History Channel did not mention, their whole crux of their argument was that they did paleomagnetic data on the rock wall, and their thesis was that if the paleomagnetic signature went in a uniform fashion, that it was a natural formation, then if it was random, it would be man-made. But what they didn't bring to the table, and people can verify this for themselves by when they go to my website and they go to the little tab to click on there where they can buy the movies at, there's a tab in there that says Bud Shelton's Geological Report on the Rock Wall. That's a free download. You just click on that and you can download the full report. This was done in the late 90s by a person who himself believes the rock wall is a natural formation, but he says in there explicitly that paleomagnetic data for the rock wall cannot be accurately done because of the massive amounts of quartz that make up this geopolymer mortar substance that holds the rocks together. And because of the high quartz makeup of that, it will always show a uniform magnetic signature because of the quartz makeup. So no matter how much paleomagnetic data you do on it, because of that quartz makeup, it's going to show that it's a natural formation. And they didn't bring that up or show that in the film or show any of the real structural engineering feats that have gone into the buttressing effect, the fact that the wall is leveled at 550 feet above sea level. Again, Chaco Canyon, the amount of leveling that went on with that site, you know, could only have been done with sophisticated leveling equipment, and nothing is uneven. We see the same thing in these mound sites. All of them were built with these sophisticated astrological alignments, and we now know that the rock wall actually has these same alignments as well. So that's the main thing, Henrik, is, again, you know, I can go out to these places and they can try to white guilt me all they want, which they do in many cases, right. Yeah. Into why I shouldn't be looking into this and why I shouldn't be bringing this up. But the fact of the matter is that, again, that only serves as a way to try and mask these underlying questions. Is there is no logical explanation or plausible explanation as to how the Native Americans, who claimed they didn't have any of this knowledge, could have used these structural engineering feats that are advanced even by today's standards in these ancient sites found across America and across the world.
Are these materials you mentioned found in the area around the rock wall? I mean, what would the purposes be if they've actually extracted this? I don't know how this would actually occur, potentially far away or locally in some way, and kind of incorporated into the building of it. Was it just for the mortar alone, you said, or are there another versions that disappear?
No, there's no rock, no natural rock found in the area around Rockwall at all. There's geologically no rock. I have identified where I believe the materials were quarried at, and that's about 4 hours south of the Dallas area, down around by Austin in a place called Llano, Texas. And this is the most, I just had never been aware of this place till I went there. It's the most geologically rich area in Texas, and in really one of the most geologically rich places in the entire country. I mean, you had a lot of the big names, a lot of Westinghouse and Edison, who were coming to that area in the early 1900s to mine yttrium to make light bulbs out of. It was also said that the uranium mine for the Fat Man and Little Boy atomic experiments was mined here. I found this area where all these materials, zircon, garnet, tourmaline, all of this exist in enough quantities, sufficient quantities for it to be possible. It was quarried there, and we found more and more evidence of this as it goes by. The main thing about it is that many of these materials, such as tourmaline and starlight, all of these minerals grow and form naturally in the ground on a host mineral rock. For instance, mm-hmm. Tourmaline can only form in the ground on a quartz crystal matrix, but somehow in these cast stones of the Rockwell, which have never been found anywhere else on the planet, you have all these materials extracted from their host rock and then crushed up into a fine crystalline powder, and then blocks are formed out of it. And these blocks, when analysis has been done on them, they show that the molecular structure of the individual minerals remain independent in situ in the stones, meaning their molecular structures don't bond together when they were combined. We have no, absolutely no knowledge of how that technique was done. And when all these minerals were extracted, you would have had a large amount of quartz that was left over. Well, that's when the analysis of the geopolymer mortar that butters these stones, they're buttered exactly as a stonemason would do. And this analysis on this mortar shows that they were made up of 3 to 4 different types of quartz crystals that were all brought in from different locations. So the analysis absolutely shows that this material was a conglomerate material that was made of this leftover stuff from the Llano area. And we actually had one of our listeners who contacted us about 6 months ago, who lives in that area, who has now found on his own property a structure that appears to be, Henrik, another rock wall complete with geopolymer mortar, complete mm-hmm. with hieroglyphs. We're going to hopefully try to get there to cover that for volume 3. It's we just continue to find more and more evidence that this stuff was quarried probably about 4 hours away and then brought up. But the amount that it would have taken to build this structure is beyond anything that we could do today. But all of the materials that are in the rock wall all are the perfect, the absolute most perfect material that you would use for a structure that you wanted to A, survive the test of time, and to be conductive for producing currents and electric currents, because as you apply low frequency oscillations to the wall, it starts to oscillate and produce energy when low frequency vibrations are applied to it. So that, based on in combination with the materials, shows that someone used these specific materials because they had heat absorption properties, things that any structural engineer would use in any building today.
Hmm. That is very interesting. So potentiality of producing energy, I've heard other people speculate that actually might be related to changes in basically, maybe not geology, but atmospheric. We have a kind of cataclysmic conditions that have created a potentiality of radiation or weakening magnetic field, etc. Who knows, right, in terms of what actually the uses might have been. And we might even be talking about, as we brought up before, that if the conditions before on the planet were very different in terms of higher oxygen levels, there's even speculation that the gravity itself was different, which is why you might have had these enormous animals in some cases that we found, not only dinosaurs, of course, but other, everything which is bigger at some point. And that's basically the conditions were different at some point on the planet. And since this changed, either due to catastrophe or other circumstances, you would have people, maybe, who knows, maybe this was a transitional period. You'd have it didn't maybe happen just overnight. It was actually something that slowly transformed or something. And this might be the evidence of someone actually trying to build something that is protective or being able to sustain them. I know you talked about the religious aspect of this too, though, and I don't think that should be discounted at all. But one must wonder, right, why they would go to this extent and length to produce something which is, in our view today, very, very bizarre. We just don't understand what the reasoning behind this would be, you know?
All of these sites have multiple uses. Yeah, I mean, I found that across the board, Henrik, in all the places that I've been to. Yes, as you said, on one end of it, you could say, yeah, it's, you know, used for ceremonial purposes, but none of them seem to have only one purpose. They also serve, as we mentioned, star charts, ways to track various solar and lunar events. But I think that two of the main things to me that really confirm what you just said there, pieces of evidence in the rock wall, specifically pertaining to different Earth climates and different Earth conditions during those times. One geologist that I spoke to about the wall that I gave information to and had him look at, specifically the mineral formation, he works for one of the big oil companies, And his analysis after looking at my information was that this rock wall, the materials of it, could not have been put together and constructed, in his opinion, in, quote, Earth's current atmosphere. That was the words. I'm still kind of perplexed as to what that really means.
Interesting.
But he said that they could not have been constructed in Earth's current atmosphere. And another one of the interesting things that we find about the magnetic signature of the rock wall is that it has a magnetic resonance to it that is greater than the magnetic field resonance of the entire planet Earth. How is that possible? We know that when there are pole shifts and when there are magnetic pole shifts on the Earth, that if you dig down deep enough and analyze rock that was around during that pole shift, you can actually date when these magnetic pole shifts happened because the magnetic signature is encoded into the rock. So possibly that's what has happened here with the rock wall. It's been in the ground so long that it actually has encoded and recorded into it the magnetic signature of various events where the Earth was completely different during the time when it was constructed. So yes, Henrik, that's actually a very valid argument when it comes to all these sites.
Yep, it's incredibly interesting. Tell us a little bit more about Ohio. And by the way, do you guys drive across the country or do you fly to get to some of these sites?
We 100% drive to everything.
Man. That's hardcore, man. Yeah, because I mean, the distances are huge here. I mean, wow, that's amazing. How do you, and it can be quite exhausting driving this length as well. I mean, it's fine. You can look, you see the country, of course, in a different capacity, and you really get a different feel for it that you absolutely miss when you fly. But it can actually be really draining just being in a car for that long.
the main thing is, though, is that we always ultimately end up finding more sites and more places to visit that I didn't know about before we went. You know, that we always end up finding stuff. You'll just be driving along and you'll see a sign that says, you know, such and such site here. And you're like, oh my gosh, I haven't even heard about this. And you go there and it ties in exactly. But some of these distances, that's one of the problems with these films. I mean, in volume 3 that we've been working on, we had that problem on our last trek out. You know, in many cases, we've traveled thousands of miles for hours and hours and hours to get to a site and only to get there. And they have part of the site closed down that day or weather conditions. I mean, the last trip we went through a massive sandstorm that ran us off the road and we went through a massive blizzard snowstorm that forced us off the road for a period of time. I mean, you just never know when you get out to these places what you're going to have to deal with. That's why it takes so much resources to make these things. So as you get out, I mean, you think everything's going to be fine. You think, okay, you'll just, you know, we'll just drive out there like any other tourist. But then inevitably, as we talked about earlier, you know, you don't know whether you're going to have to grease the skids for some local indigenous tribe who's gatekeeping this.
Right.
You know, are you going to be able to get into these sites? Many of them we've tried to get access to so we could, very specific light patterns and things occur at many of these sites during solstice and equinox events. And I've found it fascinating. I just discovered this over the course of going to these places that most all of these sites close or rather open well after the sunrise, which many of these events happen at, and then close well before sunset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meaning there's no access to these places during the times in which these particular alignments line up. I find that very, very fascinating. But Ohio, Ohio for me, as you mentioned, I mean, that area going and seeing, I mean, we saw like 8 or 9 sites within maybe a 20-mile radius in one day. And these massive earthworks that, again, all seem to have very Atlantean features, water features around them, moats in some cases, built on just massive scale. We went to a place called Homer, Ohio, which is south of where, just like about 13 miles south of where the Serpent Mound and the Newark Earthworks and all this are. And there was a place I had heard of. I heard that they had a mound there called the Nephilim Graveyard of the Kings, where they had found these giant skeletons with double rows of teeth. And when we got our navigation out to find out where this place was, we were at a site called the Alligator Mound, which is not really an alligator. It doesn't look like an alligator. It looks like some kind of strange extinct marsupial, like a possum or something. But it's this strange site, and it's built in this posh neighborhood, this very, very multi-million dollar house neighborhood. Right in the middle of this posh neighborhood is this mound site. And while we were there, we were looking at navigation on phones to figure out where the Nephilim Graveyard of the King was. And we found out that it's, even though you couldn't go there in a straight line, looking at the navigation shows you that it is south 13 miles, very interesting number, 13, of where this alleged alligator mound is. So we get in the car there, go drive out to where this is, and this giant mound is sitting in the same lot as a church. And it was kind of funny because we were sitting there going, you know, I bet these people are not informing their flocks in there of what, you know, they could probably prove their entire point by just going and showing people what's in this mound, but they aren't. So the Ohio Valley was one of those places where, like I said, when you go to Ohio, you see hills and hills and hills and hills, and you think this is just the terrain. But then you find out that no, this is not terrain. These are all mound sites that occur over 20, 30, 40, 50 miles from each other, and they all extend to form one gigantic cohesive unit in these various animal effigy mounds that you find scattered throughout Ohio, Indiana, and other places. The Servant Mound as well. They actually form over hundreds of miles a gigantic zodiac wheel, of which the Serpent Mound is the Ophiuchus, or the centerpiece of this, with all of the other animals around it acting as part of the zodiac. This predates even the oldest known zodiac, which is found in the Temple of Hathor in Dendera in Egypt. And again, that's when you start to realize, okay, you know, this is going beyond just simple burial or religious purposes. I mean, this is something that is showing significance in the creation myths and creation stories of some of these cultures. And again, Native Americans, I mean, they found a graveyard in Ohio that they call the Giant Graveyard. And this is reported. I found several news stories from the late 1800s, early 1900s about this. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of giant skeletons being found. And when the Native Americans, a local Indian chief, was asked about these sites, and he said, no, these are not us. These are not our people. Mm-hmm. These were here long before we were ever here. We don't have any idea what this is. And the same thing happens in South American cultures, stuff like what you see in Peru and Machu Picchu. You see this all being attributed again to later cultures who themselves said, we didn't build this. We're not responsible for this. No. But they are given responsibility for this by the gatekeepers, by the people who don't want you to go any further and want you to also, once you do try to go further, then again, as we talked about, they try to slap that guilt on you and try to make it appear that, oh, you know, even looking into this and even suggesting what you're suggesting is not polite. And, you know, the thing is, the truth is not always polite. We have to get to the bottom line of this, and we can't worry about being polite or politically correct. That is the little death that ends all research and all free thought.
You're absolutely right. That's just how it goes today. We're way too, we let reality be lost for the sake of some political ideology, really, that someone has dreamt up. We're in the world of social constructs, folks, and it has nothing to do with what actually is going on out there in the real world. I think it's the same. Oh, God, don't get me started on that, but a whole walk of where human civilization is entering right now. It's really, really sad, you know. But if we know that we've had plenty of excursions to America by various cultures at different times. I mean, it's pretty much, you know, the Columbus story is bullshit. We don't even have to go there. You know, the Vikings were there before. We know they managed to get to the North American continent. There's potentiality that they traveled, you know, much further in. There are stories of all kinds of different people being on the American continent. And I believe even I don't know if you went into that, but the Lewis and Clark expedition had some really interesting testimony as well, actually, in terms of some of the different stories and tribes that they encounter. And frankly, I don't understand what the big deal about it is. I mean, I know that it's used for political purposes, so that people are consequently shut down about that. But nonetheless, even if people get to that realization, just kind of like put that to the side for a moment and just like just recognize and acknowledge reality that it's much different than we've been told.
Right. And I think that is one of the main things they want. They've got this narrative built. It's their happy little narrative. It's the thing they worked very hard to build, that not only justifies the wiping out of a people to take over these particular sites, to own and control the knowledge held within them and to keep that from future generations, but again, to also then associate ownership of that with someone else and build up this culture where you wouldn't even, you wouldn't dare mention, look at what we did to the Native Americans. Oh my goodness. How could you even in your right mind even suggest that, haven't we taken enough from, I've heard that people have said that to me. Haven't right. we taken enough yeah. from Native Americans? Now you're trying to take away their heritage here. And I say, no, I'm not trying to take away their heritage at all. I'm strictly trying to show that they have been lied to on a grand scale, just as we have. And I want them to come on our side and realize that we're trying to help them realize the truth of their ancestry and get to the bottom. They deserve it right. as much as we do.
Sure,
and exactly. I think that's what people need to understand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a huge, huge conundrum, and it's something we just have to continue to kind of drum further onto. And I hope the more research and more things will kind of reveal itself. And as long as there isn't that kind of gatekeeping going on, where fines are relegated to the to the back of the the warehouse somewhere, we're of course in a better situation. But unfortunately, that's kind of where we find ourselves right now. Now, tell us about Area 51 a little bit. You went there as well. I don't know how close you got to all the excitement there and everything else that they have going on there, but there is quite a few of other sites in the area as well that actually could be potentially related to why they would put a testing facility of this kind in that area. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, that was another one of those things where you're not really expecting to find anything. I wasn't really expecting to find anything. It was just on our path, we were going to the Lovelock Cave, and we had to go. That was the route we had to go to get there. So we went to do the extraterrestrial highway. It's like 2 hours north of Las Vegas. We went to started driving out of that area. And one thing you start noticing, the closer that you start getting to Area 51, you start noticing how few cars there are on the highway. You start getting close to this thing, and there's just not very many people. And we started noticing strange aircraft. Immediately, we got some pictures that people see in Lost Secrets Volume 2 of some strange, anomalous things in the sky that we got while we were there. We got pictures of cameras and these strange towers and things built into the mountains. It was rather uneventful going through there. But the thing that we did see the most, we were followed by some massive military aircraft that we have a picture of in Volume 2. We were following for 2 hours while we were going in, and followed for 2 hours as we were going out of the area. And the people that I encountered, maybe I don't know if this is the same way all the time, but the people I encountered in the area, just the locals and stuff, boy, they are really, I imagine it's par for the course living around something like that, but golly, those people are really paranoid and really, they seem traumatized. Everybody I talked to, I would tell them I'm filming a documentary, and in most places you go, they're happy. But here at Area 51, they were like, you can't film here. You can't do this. I mean, every time I was like, I didn't even have a camera out. Nothing's unpacked. I just told them we were making a film, not that we were even filming anything. People would get really, really touchy about it. But as we talk about the Havmasuvs, these groups that supposedly lived in the area of Nevada, very close to where Area 51 is, had flying machines going back thousands of years ago. They had high technology that had been seen by some of the local tribesmen in these massive structures built into the Panamint Mountains there in Nevada, very, very close, right on the outskirts of where Groom Lake and that facility is. And so as people will see when they watch Volume 2, we started to see similarities between the idea that, why was this area chosen for advanced level research into new technologies? Why was it chosen here? And I think the evidence shows beyond any shadow of a doubt that the reason those locations were chosen is because there were already pre-existing structures and whatnot built into the mountains that they utilize for their own purposes. I mean, we know at Area 51, they have the world's largest runway that comes out of a mountain, and they have a hangar that's built into the mountain where they bring the craft out onto the runway and fly them. Now, those match identically with the stories that the natives tell, the Paiutes tell, of the Havasus in that area who had flying machines who came out of these structures that were built into the solid rock of the mountains in those exact areas where Area 51 is. So, again, you know, it's not one of those things where you can really take, 100% accuracy everything you've heard about it. I think there's definitely more with Area 51 than we've been told. I think it's definitely more than just, you know, U-2 spy planes and flying discs and whatever. It seems that this has been an ongoing research effort for years and years, and many of our technologies seem to have possibly come from this place because they're there studying, analyzing, and back engineering, not technology that was brought from a UFO in all cases, but stuff that was already there that they found that they just had no bearing on how to use.
So there could be literally some finds in the area, whatever that might be, that actually is directly related to the positioning of this thing. Is that let's just build a big thing right over it, you know, or whatever, right? We don't know, or underground or something in the area, basically. I don't know how, I forget the facilities. I mean, most of them are, I guess, above ground, but there is probably a huge underground facility there as well. So we don't know what's there going to be. Is there any other, you know, specific sites around in the locale, in the near area that you know about that connects with all of this?
You mean ancient sites or new military sites? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, you're at that, when you get there, you're 4 hours from Lovelock Cave where the giant skeletons were found. You're about 2 hours from the area of Lake Lahontan where more of the giant skeletons were found, where more of these ancient civilizations and structures, the stories of the Havasus living in the Panamints Mountains, all of that stuff exists and occurred right around the area where Area 51 is. I mean, I see things and saw things on this trip going out there. You see things that aren't marked sometimes as you're driving, rock formations. I mean, I can't tell you rock formations that we saw and got pictures of that you're just driving past. These are not parks or national parks or anything. These are just rock formations, and they all look like pyramids. Like perfectly sculpted pyramids. But the average person, when they drive by these things, I think just thinks this is somehow a natural formation. But when you go out there and you drive hours and hours and hours through the desert, you can look in the distance and see structures that you can absolutely tell were not the result of any sort of natural geological process and were indeed carved out of solid rock. Just as you see this observatory at Chaco Canyon, which was obviously, when you go there and look at it, you can even see it in Lost Secrets 2. You can see the pictures of it. The rock at the bottom, you can tell where this thing was carved out of solid rock and then used as an observatory and a tracking station for various solar and lunar events. And they actually had things built into it where the light, the Sun Dagger site at Chaco Canyon, where the light would come in and hit a rock in a certain specific way that would go on this spiral effigy rock that kind of looked like the Norway spiral from a few years ago, and the light would come in periodically on that. So definitely we see things where, yes, we've discovered these sites, we've discovered their usage, but there is so much more out there, I think, that people are not even paying attention to, that maybe even the powers that be haven't paid attention to yet, that are just sitting there waiting to be explored all across this country. And I definitely discovered that in Utah, which is really, really an unbelievable place. If you get a chance to go to Utah, that place is very, very rich, just full of petroglyphs, alien petroglyphs, and various things that depict. They depict an arrival of some kind. All of these petroglyphs, we're going to be really getting into the petroglyphs in Volume 3 and showing all the different ones across the United States and how similar they are and how they, many of them appear to be, have been created by the same hand, even though some of them date to dates that are thousands of years apart from each other, and as well as hundreds of miles apart from each other. So that's another one of the things we'll be discussing in Volume 3.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I wonder why the Mormons, chose that location, or I mean, specifically Joseph Smith. I mean, I know there are both fraud accusations, there's both Freemasonic kind of connections to him and everything else, right? But there's still this concept that they had a, you know, a spiritual calling to this, to that area, like that they were, you know, was a divine, you know, aspect that they wanted to try to fulfill by going there, etc. But again, might be one of those situations where there are much, much more to the story than we're being told, you know. Some pretty interesting temples and everything up there as well, you know.
Yeah, there is. And again, the Freemasonry time, we know that Mormonism was created after the Morgan affair in this country, which was this thing where some Freemason gave away some secrets and they, you know, they called in their threat. They called his bluff and cut his tongue out and murdered him. And Masonry was outlawed in the country for a while. So they set up Mormonism as a front to be able to practice Masonry in secret. And, you know, the Mormon thing keeps coming up quite a bit in all of this research. You know, I've had people ask me various questions about how this ties in with all of that. Joseph Smith supposedly finding these golden tablets inside of a mound. One thing I found fascinating, we talk about in Volume 2, people can make of this what they will. I don't think that this is any kind of a coincidence, but you can actually draw a direct line, and we show this in the film, from the back of the circle, the Great Circle at the Newark Earthworks in Ohio, and this will actually extend all the way around the globe in a direct line to the Great Pyramid at Giza. And subsequently, it runs from the back of this mound in Ohio all the way across the globe to Egypt and runs directly through Hill Kamara in upstate New York in a straight line directly through where the mound site is where Joseph Smith supposedly found these tablets. So I think just like every other religion and everything else, I think there is some truth in there to it somewhere that we haven't been allowed to have access to, and then we've been given these other nonsensical information that really doesn't give us any context to the truth, and then that's what the religions and the basis of beliefs of those religions has been based on. That's what you find is that when you take away the context, you can really use any information as a control mechanism. And when you do your own research and you do your homework and you find really the context, you find why is it important, as you asked, you know, why is it important that these sites have all of this advanced structural engineering in them, but are attributed to people that had no way of being able to do that. You know, they bring about questions that go beyond any explanation that the establishment gives us. And I think that that is, again, one of the key reasons why there is an ongoing cover-up in all of this, because it unravels not just one end of things. It unravels the religious end. It unravels the science end. And again, starts to create that environment where eventually people, rightly so, are going to lose all faith in any of these establishments and really put their faith only in the facts. And then hopefully that's where the future is leading
us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Now, I wanted to ask you, how do they actually corner off some of these areas? Is it just like a kind of a, have they turned them into a park and they basically, there's just one entrance in through? Because I remember, I think you went to Pyramid Lake, and that was also cornered off. You had to film it from afar. Unfortunately, you couldn't even get in there, right? So how the heck do they keep, I mean, it seems like a huge area once you're there, and like, is there just blocked the whole thing off, or what's going on there?
Yeah, it's different at all the sites. Specifically at Pyramid Lake, the side of the lake, like you come in on one side, let's say the western side of the lake. You come in on the western side of the lake, and this is where the visitor center and all this stuff is, and you can drive pretty much the entire length of the lake along that that western side. But when you go over to when you drive around and start going to where the eastern side is, talk about gatekeepers. That's exactly what it is. There's a giant gate there, and all that whole entire eastern side of Pyramid Lake is coincidentally the exact side that the United States government gave to the Paiute people as their reservation.
Right.
So it's just, I find that very interesting. We find that more and more at these sites. It'll always be the end that has things that you know, they don't want us to see, that they end up giving to them as their reservation. I mean, there was another thing we tried to look for in Volume 3. Some years ago, the researcher who you've had here on the show before, Gary Vey, he had found these stones in Colorado that had a pre-Hebrew, almost like a Canaanite type of language on them that had only ever been found in one place ever in the world. And that was at this supposed Palace of Sheba in Yemen, that he investigated, and he had had some pictures and video out of those stones. And I said, well, you know, while we're in Colorado, I want to go out and find these things, you know. And supposedly it was like a 10-mile hike to get to where they were at, but I was like, well, this is something that I've, you know, I've got to see, and I want to have this on tape. So we kind of made the trek out there to go find out where this stuff was at. And we got close to where supposedly they were and just couldn't find anything. So pulled over and talked to a guy at a gas station, and he said, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. You can't get in that area anymore. And I said, well, you can't get in that area anymore. Why? I mean, I know a researcher a few years ago that did. And he said, oh no, you can't now. They've actually, the military has actually incorporated that entire area where those stones are found into a military base. So they have cordoned off those areas in where these, you know, these ancient languages found, coincidentally, into a military base. We see the same thing all over. One of the sites in Ohio that we tried to go to, the Four Ancient Culture site, we went to that, got to see part of it, but there were two more sites that pertained to it that had some very interesting astrological alignments I wanted to capture. And you go to try to get in there, you can't. Right directly behind where Fort Ancient is a maximum security prison. And those two sites that are off limits to the public exist now within the walls of this maximum security prison. So, you know, from that and from the stuff down in Llano, where I believe the Rockwall stones were quarried at, that area, you know, we were going down there in 2012 to capture that. We try to get to where that's at. We find out Homeland Security has taken over that area. They've given no reason as to why they've taken it over. They don't even report about it on the internet. But if you go to Llano, Texas, and try to go to this area called Barringer Hill, or where Westinghouse and Edison and all these guys had massive interest in, and then they buried it with the lake, you can't even get to the area to where it is now, because it's been taken over by Homeland Security, which subsequently coincides with this massive drought that's been going on there for the past 6 or 7 years, which has now allowed part of Barringer Hill to come up out of the water. And so we've got a little bit of footage of that in Volume 1. But, I mean, you could sit here and talk about this all day, Henrik. I mean, there are you would not believe how many of these sites are now either in prisons, you know, in military bases. I mean, it's just not a coincidence. They are doing this to hide this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I believe you're right. Now, people can obviously see much more of this in the film, and maybe as a last topic here, unless there's something else you really want to think that we should go into. What about Nashville as a whole, you know, area in itself? Are there? I know that you visited obviously some of the mall there and stuff like that. There's a lot of architectural new things that are popping up in the city and everything else. But ancient wise, what's around in that area?
There's lots of stuff that's been incorporated into newer things. We went to the Bicentennial Mall that's there. It's fascinating because it's this massive complex that was a Mississippian era culture religious complex, and they built a massive park into this thing that has a lot of references to the Meru, the Stargate. It basically looks like that, like the ancient Meru from the top view of it. But when you go there, all along the side of the new structures that are built, the original mounds are still intact. You can still visit them. The Capitol, the courthouse basically overlooks the area. It's built on top of an ancient mound. They took the sites that were there, these ancient religious sites that had been used for ceremonial purposes, and then created their own new sites around them, and incorporating things like frequency technology, these tines that surround this area that put out different frequencies that all seem to affect your consciousness when you're standing in this. It's being a hop, skip, and a jump from the Mammoth Cave. You're like 2 hours north of where Nashville and where this site is. You've got the Mammoth Cave, where supposedly when books like the Eda Dorpa and others have described entrances into inner earth, there's been giant skeletons found there. Tennessee is just chock full of sites. And again, 2 hours up through Kentucky and then you go right up through Ohio. That's the thing that's fascinating to me, whether it be Tennessee or Kentucky or Ohio. You when you go out to these places, it's important to understand and get it in your head that, again, there is no separation. The separation is an illusion that's a part of this gatekeeping operation. This somehow that, oh, you know, if you go 2 hours away, a site that's 2 hours away can't possibly have had anything to do with a site that's 2 hours away from it, because according to the Smithsonian, you know, cultures on the opposite ends of the Mississippi from each other could not have had contact. And when you go to these places with the understanding that none of this is isolated, these are all meant to work together as one, that illusion of separation, that illusion of there being any sort of difference between these things melts away, and you start to understand that these were people who were migrating not only all across America, but all across the world, and leaving their footprint in the ancient sites, leaving their footprint, genetic footprint, in some of the indigenous people, seeing the tribal structures. Again, as you mentioned, Lewis and Clark, you know, one of the main things they found extensive information on when they were crossing this country was the evidence of giants. I mean, I think it was some of the stuff that was deleted from one of their diaries, you know, talking about how there are giants that somehow someone in the ancient times shackled and buried underneath the earth, and that at some point in the future, a plague of giants is going to be unleashed on humanity like a weapon. This is something that is just very, very strange, and you can really see why this would be not only kept out of the Lewis and Clark journals, but also would go to serve the reason why there's been so much disinformation surrounding giants and giant skeletons, and why there's been so much cover-up. There's something that goes well beyond what the power structure wants us to know about these ancient sites and these ancient people. And it's very possible that, yes, there may be some sort of connection to a future weaponization of ancient sites. We know that they've been looking for stuff like weaponized Nephilim blood in Iraq. I mean, there is unbelievably crazy stuff that they are wanting to find that pertain to ancient sites that they want to use for some reason, to some purpose, in the modern day as a weapon against us. So I think the main thing, Henry, I want to leave everybody with is that even though when you're looking into the stuff like I'm talking about in my newest film series, Lost Secrets of Ancient America, I know this kind of, to some people, may seem like it's not as relevant as some of the other topics that you research, but I assure you, this stuff ties directly into any subject you can bring up and goes directly to the heart of the as you mentioned, as you brought up so eloquently, the weaponization of information and the weaponization of these things to be used against us, our own ignorance and our own arrested development as far as the understanding of these things is being used against us, and it is being used to bring about their world master plan.
I agree. We'll end here shortly, but a final comment on this here. I mean, this obviously does tie back to the military question and the connection to the military of we have rumors of kind of advanced weapon development, of course, super soldiers, re-engineering this in some capacity using potentially genetics and creating something completely new. And I mean, who knows in what way that will play out, if this is a willful unleashing that's going to occur on people, if it's going to be an accident and this is somehow going to, you know, get out. If we look at the amount of money that's being poured into this, I'm not really happy about that, considering what they might have in store for people. And who knows? I mean, this could literally tie right back to something that they are trying to find. Again, I think people have to put aside whether they believe it or not in that particular question. I think it is more to do with do they believe it? Have they found sufficient evidence to suggest that there's something here that they could use as an additional weapon, basically, in order to take final control of the planet in that regard and run it for control purposes? I think that's what we need to focus and see if there's a potentiality, and not whether kind of we believe it or not.
Absolutely. And people, one of the things that people always say, Henrik, I know people said this to you a million times, it doesn't matter what subject it is you're talking about, people always want to say, okay, well, it's fine, we have this information, but what is the solution? What do we do to change this? And as far as I'm concerned, in my research, is we just keep asking questions. We keep bringing this stuff up. We keep bringing it to the forefront. What we are getting into with Lost Secrets of Ancient America Volume 3 has the potential to be able to really expose in a large way how much we have been lied to about what is here in the United States and how long people have known about it, going back to Sir Francis Bacon and even before. And I think that once we start to get a large amount of light on these issues, you are going to start to see a domino effect that will then cause the believability of all their other operations and narratives come crashing to the ground. And that's why I believe this information is important, Henry.
Very good. All right, Josh, let's leave once again with you giving us the details about the website, where to go, and of course, how people can support you for Volume 3 coming up here.
Absolutely. They can go to my website, which is theglobalreality.com. They can also just type Josh Reeves into a search engine. They'll find my website. There at my website, there's a Indiegogo banner on the right-hand side of the page that they can make contributions to towards Volume 3. And we have all kinds of great perk packages there for people that are going to get great stuff that they contribute. And also, you can get the DVDs, Blu-rays, downloads. Downloads really is a preferable way to get the film because you get it instantly. You don't have to mess with the disc. And it's all there at my website. And I'll tell you what, the first, let's say the first 50 people that go and buy a disc are going to get a free download as well. So we'll offer that to your listeners. So thank you so much, Henrik. I really appreciate you having me back again, sir.
Thank you so much, Josh. We appreciate that. And thank you very much. Do go over there, folks, and check it out. TheGlobalReality.com, and keep questioning, Josh, and good luck with upcoming Volume 3, and we'll stay in contact, and maybe we'll can have you back again, and we can continue to talk about the journey you're on, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, there you go, folks. Great having you with us today. Thank you for listening, and of course, thank you for your membership. We have much more coming with Björn Nyström, Daniel Updike, Gordon Kennedy, and Nora Gedgaudas, to mention a few. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Monday again to continue our investigations and interesting conversations. Take care and stay well. We'll speak to you soon.